It's time now for Dr. Mara Karpel and Your Golden Years. Your Golden Years is sponsored by Fry's Family Pharmacy and all the independent pharmacists of the Rio Grande Valley. Golden Years. And now it's super psychologist Dr. Mara Karpel and Your Golden Years. Golden Years.
Good evening and welcome to Dr. Mara Karpel and Your Golden Years with yours truly this evening and every Sunday evening, 5 to 7 p.m. Central Time, and that's 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern on blogtalkradio.com and directly on my website, drmarakarpel.com. And you can hear tonight's show again by going to my website, drmarakarpel.com. That's drmarakarpel.com. Again, drmarakarpel.com. And the link to tonight's broadcast and the podcast from the show will be posted right after the show. And for information from this show and updates about upcoming shows, go again to drmarakarpel.com and follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Karpel, Your Golden Years. Want to advertise your business? Send me an email to drmara@drmarakarpel.com or go through my website or give me a call at 512-626-6973. That's 512-626-6973. Tonight's show was produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Psyched Up Productions, and sponsored by the bra lady, Sonia Das, helping every woman have a perky day. In Austin, call Sonia at 512-898-9058 or go to haveaperkyday.com. I love saying that website. And tonight's show is also sponsored by Live Oak Legacies, committed to helping families capture and preserve the stories, recipes, photographs, and relics held the most dear. Find out more at liveoaklegacies.com. And today is Sunday, March 23rd. This is show number 9 here on Blog Talk Radio. And after a week away in the Sunshine State and my on-location show in Florida, we are live back once again in beautiful Austin, Texas at the office of Accomplice Entertainment in the Intelligent Office Suite on the 15th floor of Frost Bank Building on Congress Avenue. And Art Mendoza of Accomplice Entertainment and producer of this show is back doing the production engineering for tonight's show. So he's working his magic to make the show run. And he has the help of Crystal, who is also helping to work the magic. And they will be answering your calls if you call later with questions. So be sure to make them work and give a call. And if this is your first time you're tuning in, this show has been on local live radio in Austin, Texas on KJCE with 92 live shows. And tonight is our 9th 2-hour show here on Blog Talk Radio. And I'm a licensed psychologist from New York City practicing in Austin, Texas and the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. And I work with adults of all ages and have a specialty of working with seniors and caregivers. And for the past few years, I've been evaluating vets for PTSD. So you can go ahead and listen to the podcast of my shows from local Austin radio by going to my website, drmarakarpel.com. And I'm going to spell that for you again. That's drmarakarpel.com. And tonight's show is another great lineup of guests. And joining me here in the studio in Austin is Director of Rehab Program at the Carencia at Barton Creek, speech language therapist, author, and yoga teacher, Jenny Lear, who will be talking in the first hour about dementia, about her book on yoga and yoga and dementia, and more. Also, in the second hour, musicians Rosa and Joe Perez will be joining us from the Rio Grande Valley of Texas to talk about their Roots Music Project, bringing attention to music with roots just north of the border. And Laura Galazunas will join us in the second hour to report in from the retirement paradise south of the border, Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. Throughout the show, I will have time to take your questions, so if you have any questions or comments for me or my guests, please feel free to call. The toll-free number is 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Or if you're too shy to call and be heard on Blog Talk Radio, you can email or tweet your questions to me, and I will read them on air to my guests. And my email address is drmara@drmaracarpell.com. And my Twitter address is M-A-R-A-E-K. So if you listened to last week's show, you heard that I was on location in the retirement capital of the United States, sunny Florida. And while I was there, I noticed a lot of happy, active seniors in Florida. Those were the ones who I saw anyway, because they were so active and they were out in the sunshine. And one of the things that I noticed is that the more active they were, the happier they were. So I decided last week to make that the focus of the show last week on the importance of staying active physically, mentally, socially, even politically into older age. And I interviewed a winter resident of Florida who spoke about her high level of activity, including both physical activities as well as social and community activities. And she made a very good point that I want to highlight again this week. That is that connecting with other people and helping other people is an important part of feeling good oneself. So if you stay home and focus on your own health issues, then you tend to feel worse. And when you get out, and she discovered this for herself, that when she got out and she helped other people, she forgot about her own physical or emotional issues, and she started to feel better. And this is important because, you know, one of the best antidotes to depression is helping someone else. And helping other people, as Selma stated in her talk last week, helps to create a social network, which is very important as we age. That social network is the group that will help us when we need it. So it's really important to get out and help other people to feel better and help them feel better. And also these people become the people that will help you when you need help. So this week I want to expand a little bit on activity. And activity, because it's such an important topic. So I want to include physical activity, which I really focused on that mainly last week, was the health benefits of staying active. And I know that Jenny will be talking a little bit about that later because she teaches yoga, and I know that she'll talk about how physical activity really makes a difference in mental health and cognitive clarity. Right, Jenny? And also social activity and community activity and mental activity and the combination of all of these different types of activities are very powerful in preventing depression, recovering from depression, and keeping cognitive clarity and sharpness. So if a person's activity is limited by their current situation, then pushing yourself to do something to bring meaning to your life is still extremely powerful. So even if you can't do everything that you used to do at one time, that doesn't mean that you can't do anything. And I recently saw a story on the internet. I was going around Facebook. I don't know if you saw this, Jenny, but there was a story about a woman who would smile and wave at high school children. You saw that? So a lot of our listeners out there might have seen that as well. She would wave at them as they walked to and from school, and that became a meaningful activity to her because they started looking for her and smiling and waving back. So that was in her schedule every day. She needed to be by that window in the morning and in the afternoon. And it became even more meaningful at the end of this story when the high school students threw her a big party to thank her for bringing meaning into their day. So she was doing it for herself because it felt so good to smile and wave at these high school students and to have something meaningful to do and to receive their smiles and waves back. But she didn't even realize how much meaning she brought into their lives. That some of them were depressed and didn't feel so happy about going to school, and there was this lady that they were looking for each time to smile and wave at them. So they threw her a big thank you party. And I want to talk a little bit about the book, Man's Search for Meaning. Psychiatrist Dr. Viktor Frankl wrote this book. And, you know, I think this all ties together. He wrote about his experiences and observations when he was a prisoner of concentration camps during the Holocaust. At the time, he was already a psychiatrist when he became a prisoner of the concentration camp. So he found some meaning in observing other prisoners and himself and how he felt in various situations, and actually turned, he got out, he survived, and he turned what he learned into a type of therapy. I believe it's called prolotherapy. And what he discovered is that, to quote him, man's search for meaning is the primary motivation in his life. So he discovered that the prisoners of the camp who were able to find some meaning even in this most horrific situation were the ones who fared the best, including himself. So finding meaning was as basic as helping his fellow prisoners by sharing scraps of food. He also goes on to describe one extremely hopeless situation when he thought it was the end for him, and he was able through it by visualizing himself at some later point when he was out of this situation, standing in front of an audience, describing this very situation and how he got through it as a way of helping those people in the audience. And in fact, that's what gave him the strength to keep going on. And that did happen. Many years later, he was in front of that audience describing that very day and how he got through it as a way of helping and inspiring other people. He wrote again in that book, we must never forget that we may also find meaning in life even when confronted with a hopeless situation, when facing a fate that cannot be changed. When we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. Once one finds that meaning, the sadness and the wish to give up often lifts. So even if Dr. Frankl could find his sadness and his wish to give up lifting in such a horrific situation, I think that we can all be inspired by that and find ways of finding meaning in our own lives. So one of the ways that I noticed when I was in Florida that people found meaning in their lives was to get very involved in community and political activity. So there are a lot of seniors in Florida who are very involved in their community and helping other people similar to themselves, other older people, but also helping people that are not similar to them, helping children, helping homeless, just getting involved in helping people in the community at large. And a lot of the seniors were very active politically. And I've noticed throughout my years of working with the older population that those older adults who are willing to put away their age-related aches and pains and to make their voices heard as part of the community and to have power through their voice in the community, they felt a lot better. They maintained their passion. They maintained their interest in what was happening in the world, and it kept the passion in their own life. And the research has actually backed this up, and it has shown that older adults who are politically involved today and willing to stand out in the cold rain or on street corners with signs, or in the heat of the Florida sun with signs, or at the polls helping voters to sign in or plastering flyers around their neighborhoods about upcoming elections. A lot of them have been involved their whole lives in this type of activity and are more aware of and educated about what is going on in the world at this point in their life than many young people are. And these are the same people that tend to read the newspaper, watch the news, read books, go to lectures in order to keep up with what's going on in the world. And here are some statistics for you to digest. They're a little bit old. They're from 2004, so we're talking a few years ago. In 2004, 71% of Americans aged 65 and older voted in the presidential election, 71%. And this was the highest percentage of any other age group. The lowest voting rate belonged to 18 to 24-year-olds. In the 2004 presidential election, Americans in the 65 and older age group cast 19% of the total votes in the U.S., while this age group only accounts for accounted for 16% of the total U.S. population of voting age. So there was a higher percentage overall of voting Americans that consisted of older people, while there is of older Americans in the voting population. And in 2007, a study about political involvement in older Americans found that in the previous seven presidential elections, Americans 65 and older voted at significantly higher rates than those in the 18 to 24-year-old age group and the 25 to 44-year-old age groups. And except in 1980 and 1984, as high or higher than the 45 to 64-year-old age group. And this was found to be true of the previous seven congressional elections as well. Robert Binstock observed that older Americans are more engaged in the political process than younger Americans, not only by voting more, but by contributing to and working in political campaigns, contacting public officials, serving on local advisory boards, and belonging to organizations that engage in political activity. So another researcher observed, Andrea Campbell, observed in her book, that older Americans are senior citizens, fully incorporated into social and political citizenship. So as I mentioned previously, passionate involvement in any activity, whether it be a social cause, a hobby, a creative endeavor, social relationships, exercise, dancing, or most anything else is a key ingredient to staying healthy physically, cognitively, and emotionally throughout the life cycle. And the research backs up the fact that over and over again, research findings have shown that involvement in activities that we are passionate about keeps us alive and capable of contributing our wisdom to society for many more years than those who stay home and worry about their health. So I hope that encourages people to stay involved if they are already involved and to get involved if they're not, and to start doing that at a younger age, because that makes it easier to stick with it as you get older than it is to start from scratch when you are older. It's much easier when you're already involved in political organizations or social causes, community organizations. It's much easier to get started when you're younger and then stick with it. Just, you know, even if you don't feel they'll do it. So I will leave you with that, and we're going to take a quick break. So stick around, and after the break, Jenny Lear, who's right here in the studio, will be talking about dementia, her new book about dementia, yoga, Curly Girl Studios, and more. And we'll be taking your calls, your tweets, your emails with your questions. So please feel free to give a call with questions to toll free 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Send me a tweet to MAREK or send an email to Dr. Mara at drmarakarpel.com, drmarakarpel. Okay, and we'll be right back.
Please visit us on the web at www.drmarakarpel.com. Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240.
If you despise bra shopping in the stores, have a complimentary bra fitting at your home or office. It's so convenient. And with 13 styles, including a no-wire bra and 52 sizes A through H cup, Sonia Das, the bra lady, has the bra that's just right for you. What are you waiting for? Call to schedule your personal fitting today and find out what all the ladies love about essential body wear. Call 512-981-8788 or preview the products at haveaperkyday.com. And have a perky day. Gravity.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Carpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Carpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.
And we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Carpel and your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmarakarpel.com. And now joining me in the studio, Director of the Rehab Program at the Carencia at Barton Creek, speech language therapist, author, and yoga teacher, Jenny Lear, who's here to talk about dementia, her new book about dementia, yoga and dementia, and hopefully we'll get to talk a bit about her Curly Girl Studios. So we're taking your calls with questions and comments for Jenny. You could give a call at toll-free 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Or send me a tweet to M-A-R-A-E-K or an email to Dr. Mara at drmarakarpel.com, and I will pass your question along to Jenny. And I know that we already did get one caller, so Jenny will be answering his question in a while after she gets to talk a little bit about dementia. So welcome, Jenny.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be back again, Mara, and this is absolutely beautiful digs here overlooking Austin. Yes, thanks for having me. Lots to talk about.
Lots to talk about. And we're sharing one microphone. So.
We're sitting kind of cozy.
Very close.
That's okay. I took a bath.
I did too.
Okay.
So. I paused, so I don't want anybody to think that that's not the case. So, Jenny, let's start with your book. You just came out with a new book. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. It was quite a feat. I'm not the sole author. I have a co-author, Megan Malone, and we are both speech-language pathologists. With our you know, area of focus in our career is on dementia, and we've been giving a lot of national talks about the topic to other clinicians. And so we were approached by Plural Publishing to put together this book, and it's called Here's How to Treat Dementia.
So according to Amazon, it is the book to have. It covers everything. It's comprehensive, all-inclusive field manual for therapists who are working with it's what they need. It says all-inclusive field manual therapists need while working with the dementia population. So I think it's probably a really good book.
Yeah. I'm a little biased. Yeah. It's a good book. Like Amazon said, it is a field manual. So it's written for a therapist, for a clinician to work with folks who have a diagnosis of dementia. Because the majority of people that we work with, those of us who work in geriatrics or work with adults, the majority of the population that we work with has some sort of diagnosis of dementia, whether that's mild cognitive impairment or something greater than that. So it requires a special set of tools. It requires being able to think outside the box. And a lot of clinicians are really good working with dementia. It's just they need to feel empowered. And I myself, when I started to work with folks of this population who had dementia, I didn't know what I was doing at first. And it wasn't until somebody gave me one tool that made me feel empowered, like I could actually make a difference with these people. And so after several years of working with this population, Megan and I both decided that it was time to share those tools with other clinicians.
And so the title is Here's How to Treat Dementia. So does this mean that it's curable?
No, it's not. And I always like to start with that. I get that asked that a lot, if it's curable. And, you know, as a speech language pathologist, am I going to work to cure somebody? And that's definitely not, happening now. And that's, I don't see that in the very near future, a cure for dementia, but we do have a lot of tools to use to help people meet their goals. So no, we're not curing dementia. There's no cure right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now, you said the book is written mainly for a therapist, so you mean physical therapist, occupational?
Yeah, it was primarily written for speech-language pathologists, but it's a good book. It's a good resource for physical and occupational therapists as well. I've had a lot of family members. I do some talks locally for support groups, and I've actually had a lot of family members purchase the book because there's a lot of good information in general about dementia. And as you and I both know, when you're dealing with family members who are dealing with their loved ones who suffer from dementia, any little bit of information helps. And so there's a lot of good knowledge, really basic knowledge stuff about dementia that family members seem to enjoy as well. But the book is for clinicians. It's for therapists, and it talks about everything from the diagnosis to symptoms, staging of dementia, you know, what you can expect at different stages of the diagnosis, different tools to use to help people meet their goals that you're working on, behavioral issues that come up with people who have dementia, and also there's some resources that we provided for family members talking about how to deal with taking the car keys away from a loved one when the time comes for that, talking about weight loss or swallow problems with somebody who's got the later stages of dementia. So it's just a manual that has a little bit of everything.
Okay. So can you talk a little bit about how physical, occupational and speech therapists actually work with people who have dementia?
Yes. You know, we... as I said before, and in particular, I work in a large senior community, so there's about 85% of the population in general, people who live in assisted living communities, suffer from some sort of diagnosis related to dementia. But these people also come up with physical as well as cognitive needs. So our residents will have broken hips, they'll have gait dysfunction, you know, from an injury. They have knee replacements. They've got shoulder injuries. So they, even though they have a diagnosis of dementia, they still need to participate in a rehabilitation program to get them stronger so that they can continue to mobilize and to care for themselves as much as possible. Because you know, and I know that the research shows that folks who do as much as they can in the later stages of life, the more that they can do for themselves, the better it is for them. And the longer they'll live and the more quality of life they'll have. So the therapist can use techniques to help somebody meet their goals. For instance, if we're trying to teach somebody to remember to use their walker because now they're rehabilitating from a hip fracture and they can no longer just use a cane or no longer use, you know, no device. They have to learn now to remember to use a walker. There's the spaced retrieval technique is a technique that's designed for people who have a diagnosis of dementia, who have memory impairment, where you can teach them to learn new habits and tap into motor memory to help them learn a new habit, to learn to remember to use the walker. Because people think that you have dementia, you can't learn new things, and that isn't always the case, especially with regards to motor memory. So we try to figure out how somebody ticks, despite the memory impairment, despite having a diagnosis of dementia. We feel that, and it's been shown, and I've had lots of successes teaching people new habits. And that's how we do it. You know, we just kind of figure out what makes them tick, what abilities are spared, as opposed to focusing on what they can't do anymore.
Okay, so this might be a good time to go to the caller. We have a caller who has a question about dementia. Are you ready to take a question, Jenny? Okay, so we're going to go to Ernesto, who's been hanging on the phone since the beginning of the show. Thank you for your patience, Ernesto. And Jenny's going to answer your question. Hi there.
Hello, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you? I want to let you know that there's a little bit of a delay. I want to let you know there's a little bit of a delay when we speak through the phone, so we each have to pause, otherwise we might talk over each other. Okay?
Correct. Okay.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to give you to Jenny because I know that your question is for Jenny. So,
okay.
Hello. I hope I can help you.
Yes. Thank you very much for offering this radio broadcast. I want to thank everyone in Brownsville who's listening, and Joe and Rosa Perez, who are also on the show. Joe was my English teacher in high school, and I want to thank him for many years of education. And my question is, how many degrees of dementia are there? I have a friend who's lost his keys several times, but it's not something to take away his keys, but are there different degrees of dementia, and how do you assess that?
That's a very big question. let's step back for a moment, and first of all, it's very important to understand that dementia is not a diagnosis in of itself. So you don't just have dementia. Dementia is a set of symptoms that is caused by something going on in the brain. So you might have plaques and tangles of proteins in the brain that are Alzheimer's disease, which in turn disrupts the communication between the neurons in the brain, and that causes memory loss. So it's important to understand that there's different reasons for somebody to have dementia symptoms. Once somebody is diagnosed, which is very, very important because dementia is not a normal part of aging at all. Just because you get old doesn't mean that you're going to have dementia. So the very first thing that needs to happen is a diagnosis needs to happen because there is a percentage of dementias that are actually reversible. And once a good diagnosis is made, usually by a neurologist, then the therapist or the neurologist, the physician, whoever's involved can start to stage the dementia. And there's different staging tools. One is called the Brief Cognitive Rating Scale, and there's the Global Deterioration Scale. Those are were developed by Dr. Barry Riesberg. And the BCRS, Brief Cognitive Rating Scale, is, I think it's a 7-stage scale. And there are different behaviors associated with each scale. And you can kind of pinpoint which characteristics fit in each stage on the scale, and you can kind of determine where they are in the dementia process. Does that? I hope that answers your question.
Yes. Now, is that in your book?
Yes. That information is actually in the book, and Dr. Riesberg gave us permission to print and talk about his rating scales in the book.
That is very interesting. Your book sounds like a winner. And I have one more question.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
My question is, do you find dementia in prevalent in races higher, say, for instance, in Latin or Caucasian?
That is a question that I cannot answer. Mm-hmm. I have not done any research into the different demographics of dementia. Now, you keep in mind, there's a lot of different dementias. So, you know, there's a dementia that's related to Alzheimer's disease. There's a dementia that can be related to people who suffer from blood sugar issues, from diabetes, which I would say because diabetes is more prevalent among the Hispanic population, I would say that that type of dementia may find itself higher in that population of people. But I don't know very specifics about Alzheimer's dewilia, about Lewy body dementia, the Parkinson's dementia. I think because it's still, you know, we're still trying to figure it out, basically how somebody develops a dementia. So I just haven't really focused any research on the demographics, but that's a very good question.
Sounds like a study's in need. Thank you very much. You've been very helpful. I want to give a shout-out to my friend Eduardo and my other friend Janet in Brownsville, Texas. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Ernesto. Thank you for calling. Those are great questions.
Thank you.
All right, you have a good night. Okay, so if people want to call, like Ernesto did with your questions, you could give a call at 855-345-4720. So now, Jenny, would you say that the overall attitude toward dementia in the healthcare setting has changed with regard to treatment of dementia, especially with regard to reimbursement by Medicare? I know that that was an issue when I first began as a psychologist, that Medicare didn't necessarily want to cover any kind of treatment. So has that changed?
It has changed. Medicare has actually, there's a transmittal that states, and this is several years old, but it states that they cannot deny a claim based on the diagnosis of dementia, which is pretty significant. Mm-hmm. That being said, of course, if somebody has a diagnosis of dementia, we need to be able to make progress towards goals. And that's why it's even more important to utilize special tools to help you work with those folks who have dementia, kind of step outside the traditional therapy model and be a little more creative so that you can make your goals. But Medicare does indeed reimburse despite the diagnosis of dementia. There's been a huge shift, and it's changing day to day. I think it's being more accepted because we're finding more and more people diagnosed with this with dementia. It's more accepted that the folks that we work with are going to have a diagnosis of dementia. I find now, because I attend the American Speech and Hearing Association conference every year, that there's more and more presentations, lectures, and research out there on working with folks who have dementia. And there's more tools that are being adopted by the American Speech and Hearing Association, as well as the American Physical Therapy Association and the American Occupational Therapy Association, to work with people who have dementia, because Medicare is reimbursing for our services now. And this is a huge shift, I think, in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I remember that if I had clients that had dementia, I could not see them. So, which really made no sense. So I'm glad that it has changed. So you talked about goals. You said that there have to be certain goals. And what goals are those that the people that you work with, what are the goals that they have when they work with clients that have dementia?
So our overall goal, and in any community setting, you know, I work in long-term care, skilled nursing, I work in with assisted living, I work in home health. So all of our goals have to be functional. Our goal is to get somebody to the highest level of functioning possible, to get them as independent as they possibly can. And so that's what your goals are working toward. And your goals have to be written such that they are very functional. You can't, as a physical therapist, you don't want to just say, I want to get this person ambulating with a walker for 300 feet. You're going to tag on something that's really functional so that they can go out to get the mail, you know, or that, so that they can walk to the dining room without the burden of a caregiver. So we're trying to keep them functional. So all of our goals are written functionally based.
Okay, so now you've talked a little bit about the wonderful place that you work in, because you're the director of rehab there, and you just love it at the Carencia. So what is the model over there? Why is it so wonderful?
I'm so glad you asked. So I work for the Carencia at Barton Creek, and it is a CCRC community, and that stands for Continuum of Care Retirement Community. And you're going to hear, and the listeners are going to start to hear more about CCRCs popping up around the United States. What it means is that the residents buy in, you know, they give up some resources to move into a CCRC. Now, they'll give up resources to move into Carencia. And in return, Carencia promises to take care of them for whatever transitions occur in their life. So Carencia is well-equipped to take care of these folks as they transition from independent living to assisted living to perhaps something unfortunate happens and they need skilled nursing, short-term rehab. We'll have them in our short-term rehab to get therapy there. If they need to transition to nursing home level, we can take care of them there. Or if they end up with dementia, we can take care of them in our memory support. And then at the end of their life, those initial resources go back to their estate. So what makes it so wonderful for a clinician, for me, because I've been in the business 25 years, is I am there to please the residents. I'm not there to please the shareholders of a big corporation. I'm there to promote health. I'm there to be proactive as a therapist. I don't just wait for somebody to break a hip. I am given the opportunity to get in before the decline happens, because it's cheaper, of course, for a CCRC to take care of somebody when they're living independently as opposed to taking care of them in the nursing home, so it makes more sense. So it's a wonderful continuum of care. And so it's just a really nice change of perspective from a clinician standpoint. And it's all about wellness. And and you talked at the beginning of the show, it's wonderful how you were talking about seniors staying active in later years in life, and that's what Currencia promotes. You know, they promote getting active physically, cognitively, spiritually, and socially. And they ensure that there's enough available for these residents to stay active. And rehab and the therapists are actively involved in that program as well. So at the end of a therapy program, after somebody's broken a hip or hurt their knee, the very end, we're encouraged to attend the activities that are at Currencia. We can attend the yoga classes or the Tai Chi classes with a resident to make sure that they're integrated back into the community. I could talk for 3 hours about Currencia. I'm very passionate about it.
It seems like there would be a lot of benefits for the residents for this type of program, because if Currencia is saving money by keeping people well, that's a lot better for the resident, right? There's more motivation to keep people well than, some high profit companies where it's more profitable for someone to be not well and to require more services.
Yeah.
So does this particularly help people with dementia? Or the spouses of people with dementia?
You know, yes. I mean, let's go back to the diagnosis. We can't prevent the diagnosis. And I know there's a lot of controversy out there about doing things to prevent dementia and, without going too far into what causes dementia and whatnot. You know, I think that there's genetic components. I think I am almost a believer that if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. But in the CCRC, the beauty of it is that we can get in and put some things into place. Perhaps somebody's showing some mild cognitive impairment while they're living in the independent living part of our community. We, as therapists, can go in, adapt the home environment, give them tricks and tools that they can use to function despite having memory impairment, and keep them there, buy them a little more time, and then help them prepare for the transition maybe over to assisted living or to the memory support. The beauty of it is that the spouse lives in the same community, so it's not like having to drive across town to visit your loved one once they need to move to memory support. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just merely a stroll across campus. And you're always there for your loved one whenever they need you. And it takes the burden off of the spouse to be the caregiver. And now the quality of time that is spent with the spouse is so much sweeter. And you can visit your loved one and then go participate in all of the great activities at Currencia to take care of yourself, because the spouse will likely live for years and years after the loved one passes. So that's one of the benefits about living at Currencia or a CCRC that has the memory support involved as well.
Okay, so I would like to take a quick break right now. I think we're gonna take a quick break because after we come back, I want to shift the conversation a little bit to yoga, because Jenny is an amazing yoga instructor. I know, because I've taken many of her classes, and they're always packed. If you're not on time, you can't get a place in her class. So she's popular, the yoga instructor. And we're also going to combine these two topics and talk about yoga and dementia, because there is actually a tie here. They're not two separate, mutually exclusive topics. So we're going to take a break, but don't go away. Be sure to call in with any questions that you have. If you have some questions for Jenny, give a call toll-free, 855-345-4720.
That's 855-345-4720. Or again, if you're too shy to speak on air, send me a tweet to M-A-R-A-E-K or an email to drmara@drmaracarpell.com. That's D-R-M-A-R-A at drmaracarpell.com. And I will pass your question along to Jenny. So come right back. And we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Carpell in your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmaracarpell.com. And I am speaking with Director of the Rehab Program at the Carencia at Barton Creek and speech language therapist, author, and yoga teacher, Jenny Lear. And we've been talking about dementia. And we're taking your questions and comments, 855-345-4720, or Twitter, you can tweet me at M-A-R-A-E-K, or send me an email with your questions to drmara@drmaracarpell.com. And now we are shifting over to the topic of yoga, because Jenny is an amazing yoga instructor. What I like, Jenny, I'll tell you what I like about her classes. There are all different levels of people in those classes, and everybody in the class something out of it. So if you have a beginner in the class, they don't feel like they can't keep up, because Jenny's really good at
modifying things for people who are not able to do, you know, an advanced pose. And then for the more advanced students in the class, there are those advanced poses, and she modifies it for them as well. And there's no judgment, and Jenny is very clear about that, how this is your own practice. Don't keep up with what everybody else is doing. And I think that's a really important message in yoga. So thank you for the classes, Jenny.
You know, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because actually that came up today in my class today, talking about we were doing a fairly advanced pose. It was a large class, but I had a lot of folks from my beginner's class come to the class today, which the noon class is just a regular hatha class, all levels. So I had some very timid participants, and we were doing a pose that might be considered more advanced, but of course they gave lots of modifications. But my belief is that yoga should be accessible to everyone, no matter what. I believe that no matter if you are a seasoned yogi or somebody off the street, you should be able to come to any of my classes at least and participate and be safe and get something out of it. And although I practice all levels of yoga and I prefer a real sweaty, active class, mm-hmm. I regularly practice the beginning level yoga classes. But I can get just as much out of those classes. So, yeah.
And also, as you've mentioned on a previous show, when we talked about yoga, you even would accommodate somebody who is not able to get onto the floor.
Yes, absolutely. And at Corinthia, where I work, I teach a yoga class there for the seniors. And the class that I teach is a chair yoga class. And there we have all levels. I have a woman there who's in her 80s who still goes across the street to play tennis at the country club. Yeah, we have a very active group. But she comes to my chair yoga class. She could easily go to some of the other yoga classes that are offered, the floor yoga with the mats, but she likes the chair yoga. You know, she can get just as much out of it there. But yeah, and I do teach the chair yoga there at work. I just think that, and if you want to segue into dementia and yoga, you know, yoga is not going to cure dementia. But I do have a woman who comes to one of my regular classes that I teach in the community, who has told me, she says she has a diagnosis of, you know, mild cognitive impairment, early dementia, and she's very nervous about learning the sequences and learning to do the right things. And I said, you know, the beauty of it is that muscle memory is spared. Generally, for most people who have a diagnosis of dementia, muscle memory will be spared to the later stages. So you can learn now these poses. And they'll be ingrained in your memory. They'll be ingrained deep inside the brain for you to access later on. Yeah, so although I don't know if there's a lot of research out now regarding yoga and dementia, everybody still needs to move the body, right? And if you can get somebody who's got a diagnosis of dementia to move, and to stretch, stretches, those asanas, those postures are good. Are they good for the body? They're good for the joints. They're good for the bones. They're good for the mind. And there's a lot of health benefits to a lot of the systems, the circulatory system, the respiratory system. It's good for the glands. It's good for anxiety, etc. So even with dementia, somebody might be able to benefit from the postures as well.
Well, one of the things that I have found in the research is that anxiety and dementia have they have an impact on each other. And so people with dementia obviously have anxiety about their memory loss, and they become very anxious about that. But then anxiety can actually, I don't know if it will bring on dementia, but can actually accelerate dementia. Mm-hmm. So would you say that the yoga helps with that, because yoga helps with anxiety?
Yes. Yeah, it is like which came first, mm-hmm. you know, the chicken or the egg with regards to anxiety. anxiety can be significantly reduced with a yoga practice, with the right asanas, with the right postures, and the right sequence of postures. Your yoga teacher is going to find out your individual needs and will design a class for you, sequencing perhaps more forward folds for somebody who has a diagnosis of anxiety or is suffering from anxiety, because the forward folds are typically calming and cooling, and cooling and calming to the nervous system. So yes, there are certain postures that one can access at any time. You don't have to go to a yoga studio, although we want you to, but you can access a lot of those postures, learn them and take them home and use them periods of time when you really need it. The studio that I work for, Yoga Yoga, they are offering health and wellness classes now, and I teach a yoga for stress management class. And the lion's share of the folks that come to my yoga for stress management class are really suffering from significant issues that create anxiety and stress in their day. Some are caregivers of people who have chronic diseases or dementias. Some are just extremely stressed out from work. And a lot of them end up coming to class and admitting that they're stress eaters. And so a lot of them have weight issues. And so yoga, aside from teaching you to calm and cool and relax, teaches you to tune in. Tune into what your body's really telling you. So is it a hunger pain, really? Or is it that you're so nervous your stomach is rumbling? So are you reaching for the Ben and Jerry's because you're hungry? Or are you trying to suppress that feeling you have in the pit of your stomach, which is actually stress-related? And so that's one of the beauties of yoga, is it kind of teaches you over time to tune into the signals that the body is giving you so that you can access the tools that are needed to deal with your stress.
Would you say there are some cognitive benefits to yoga that might help somebody who has dementia, or help the rest of us to keep from having, you know, memory loss is not all dementia, right? We have age-related memory loss. So can yoga help with that?
I believe that it can. I don't have research in front of me, but I can tell you that because it's a holistic approach. When somebody starts a regular yoga class, in general, you're learning to slow down. You're learning to tune into your body. Therefore, people tend to be more aware, become more aware of what they're putting into their body. They become more aware of the types of food that they eat and how that food makes their body react. They're learning to focus more on what they're doing on the mat and learning to focus to be in the present moment as opposed to worrying about what's going to happen in the future or ruminating over what happened in the past. So, yes, in that respect, I think people who practice yoga could decrease significantly cognitive dysfunction just because you're learning to take better care of yourself and your body. You're learning more about proper rest, proper sleep. The yoga teacher doesn't just teach asanas. I feel I'm called to help people take care of their bodies holistically as well. So I will talk about foods that you eat and how to take care of yourself. So I think in that respect, yes, yoga can help you to improve cognitive dysfunction. It helps with focus. I know that for sure. It takes a lot of focus to stand on your head for 25 breaths, as well as perhaps be in a hip opener pose that might have a lot of sensation. It takes a lot of focus to tell yourself to stay in that pose and not let the mind tell you that you can't do it.
That's one of the biggest messages I give. The mind will tell you to bolt. The mind will tell you to move or scratch an itch or adjust yourself because the mind is bored, perhaps staying in a posture for a long time. So it takes a great amount of to just be. And so with that respect, I have a lot of students who report much more clarity of mind after having a regular yoga practice.
Yeah. That's great. And, you know, I think focus does help cognitive abilities and cognitive clarity. But I think one can also make the argument, which I've spoken about here on this show, that learning new things, both and not just mentally learning things, but physically learning new things, builds new neurons in the brain, right? And we always want to build new neurons because the old neurons, we lose some of them, right? So we want to replace them.
Absolutely, and that goes back to those tools that we use in therapy for folks who have dementia, and it can be applied to the yoga practice as well. It's all back to muscle memory. And the example that I give for people who argue that you can't teach an old dog new tricks is the light that you have in your walk-in closet. And every day, twice a day, for however many years you live in your house, you flip on that switch when you go to walk into your walk-in closet. And one day the light bulb burns out. But what do? You still flip that switch, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's muscle memory. It's ingrained in your brain. Your hand is still going to reach for that switch. You do it enough, it becomes a habit. And so you can learn new habits using motor memory. Tying your shoes is a great example. You could tie your shoes with your eyes closed in the dark because you've done it over and over and over again. Brushing your teeth, your yoga practice. You do it enough. You do sun salutations enough. You can do that with your eyes closed. And that's a wonderful moving meditation. And it's a wonderful way to take care of the spine and to take care of the muscles and the backs of the legs, the hip flexor muscles that need to be lubricated to prevent hip fractures. So, don't think that you can't learn new things. Use your muscle memory.
Yeah, there's a book about neurobics, okay, about increasing the neurons in your brain. And you just said something about closing your eyes and doing. That's one of the things that they talk about is trying to use all of your senses rather than depending on just one sense. And when you do that and you make associations with your other senses, you grow a new neuron. Okay, so growing new neurons is a very good thing, right?
Yes, and anyone can grow new neurons. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do understand that there are brain diseases and brain dysfunction that eats up, you know, brain cells, but you still have brain cells that can develop new neurons. And that's what we do in speech therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy. You've had a stroke or you have a brain dysfunction that has affected a limb or movement, a motor disorder. There's a big, significant part of the brain that can be tapped into to teach new pathways and to teach you to access so that you can use that limb again. That's great. Brilliant.
Mm-hmm. So do the therapists, the physical therapists, occupational therapists, speech therapists, do they use yoga as part of their therapy program?
It's becoming more and more acceptable. I work for the American Speech and Hearing Association is a very typically, I think, very conservative organization. And it's been wonderful to see in the last 5 years, three to 5 years at the American Speech and Hearing Association conferences when I would go to speak at these national conferences, there's more and more lectures, presentations, and research going on linking yoga and the use of yoga techniques for speech therapy. In particular, I use yogic techniques for my clients that come to me with voice disorders. The breathing is a big part of teaching somebody to use their voice properly. Or I work with Parkinson's disease. Those people need to learn to access all lobes of the lung to continue to be able to speak loudly and clearly. So I utilize a lot of yogic techniques. There's a yoga that's being used for people who have swallow deficits. We'll teach somebody who maybe in the later stages of dementia has a swallow deficit. It's typical for people to have the swallow mechanism break down. And so we need to teach people to be able to take a deeper breath to protect their airway. And I use yogic techniques all the time. And so physical therapists and occupational therapists as well, for pain management specifically. Now, there's a lot of physical therapists who are using it for pain management. Yeah, it's becoming more of the mainstream, which is really wonderful to see in all of the disciplines.
So is it more accepted now by the healthcare, you know, mainstream healthcare?
Absolutely. And I believe that there are some insurance companies now that are giving reimbursement for yoga and yoga therapy. And I know Yoga Yoga, the organization that I work with, they're really tapping into this idea that yoga can be used as part of your healthcare regimen. Mm-hmm. And be preventative. And it's becoming much more acceptable. And I see that in the next 5 or 10 years, that's going to be a normal part of your health care program.
That's great. That's encouraging. Okay, so I'm going to give up the 8 minutes that I had planned to wrap up what I was talking about about staying active, because I want to talk about your Curly Girl Studios. Now, if you looked at my website, you'll see a picture of Jenny. You can see that she's got curly hair, very curly hair, like I do, but hers is much thicker. Hers is much thicker. Thus the name Curly Girl Studios. But what you do in Curly Girl Studios is not about your hair. So I saw that you have written many books, but this book that you just published is not your first book. So can you talk a little bit about that?
So I've actually only written one other book. I'm Curly Girl Studios is I'm an illustrator. I'm a freelance illustrator. And I laugh every time I hear about Curly Girl Studios, because I truly, I have a hard time multitasking. Mm-hmm. And so Curly Girl Studios has been on the back burner for a little while I focused on, you know, trying to be this Renaissance woman, you know, doing the yoga and the book writing and the dementia and the rehabilitation. But I do freelance illustration, working with authors, mainly the books that I've illustrated, and there's a couple dozen books that I've illustrated. They are mainly educational-related books written by speech-language pathologists. There's a great publishing company here in town that I've worked with forever, called ProEd Inc., and I've been illustrating for them for a long time, and I had a very short stint as an author for them, and I currently and an editor for them as well, and am currently working on hopefully another publishing project with them. But that's what Curly Girl Studios is. It was years ago, I really thought I would do more on the illustration side, but when you illustrate, I know some artists out there might, whether you're a musician or whether you're an artist of the media type, when it gets to be a job, you lose the passion. And so I kind of had put it on the back burner a while because it became more of a job, right? So... yeah, that's what Curly Girl Studios is. And it's all about the hair product, by the way. So
I'll have to get your secret later. So Jenny, If people are interested in buying your book, if they're interested in taking one of your yoga classes, I'm really interested in that stress yoga, stress management yoga, or finding out about your illustrations, what are the different ways that they can reach you or find out about you?
Yes. You know, email is really the best way to get in touch with me, and I'm going to give you two email addresses. So if you're interested in information, you know, if you want to know about rehabilitation, particularly rehab for folks who have dementia, if you want to know more about the CCRC type of community, Carinthia, here's the Carinthia email address, and it's long. Get your pens ready. Okay, it's JLOEHR. At, and it's a long one, Carinthia Barton Creek. So that's QUERINCIABARTONCREEK.com.
Whew. Don't worry, I will post this on my website.
Another way to get in touch with me is my personal email address, and that's Jenny Lear 65. So that's JennyLoehr 65 at gmail.com. And then if you want to find out about any of the yoga classes offered, go to yogayoga.com and you can take a look at there are hundreds of classes. My classes are listed. I'm the teacher, Jenny L. There's a lot of Jennies, Jennifers, Jens at Yogi Yoga, but I'm Jenny L. And if you want, you can always get in touch with me through Yogi Yoga, so you don't have to go through all those other email addresses. Frequently, you know, I've got people who just contact the Yogi Yoga studios, any of them. We have five studios, and they manage to get a message to me, and I'm really good at returning the call as soon as possible.
And your book, it's available on Amazon.com. And again, what is the title of the book?
It is called Here's How to Treat Dementia, and it's Plural Publishing, P-L-U-R-A-L, Plural Publishing. And it's Jenny Lear and Megan Malone is my beautiful co-author who lives in Ohio.
Well, Jenny, thank you so much for coming this evening. As usual, it's a pleasure. This has been so much fun talking to you. We covered everything. This is great.
And it was fun sitting so close to you.
Yes, and your hair smells nice. Okay, so stick around. We're going to take a brief break, and after the break, Laura Yelizunas will be talking to us from Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, and then later we'll be hearing about the Border Roots music of Joe and Rosa Perez. So come right back.
See the frigate flying so high now, shows a man where to fish. Watch me send it, he lies in his hammock, teaches tourists how to live, and he knows how to live. Hear the thunder high in that mountain, watch the clouds rolling in. Senoritas, they dance on that shoreline, making plans for that kiss, and they know how to kiss. They say that we're 1 hour behind, but the senoritas, they keep us in time. That poppy CT just blows through my mind. It takes me back to my place, Punta Mita time. But the senoritas, they keep me in time. That poppy CT just blows my mind, and it takes me back to that place, Punta Mita time. That lightning striking the water makes the
And we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel and your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmarakarpel.com. And now we have Laura Galazunas on the phone joining us from the retirement paradise south of the border with the Vallarta, Mexico. Finally, Laura, we caught up with you in Mexico.
Yes, we have. Time changes and all.
We thought you were lost in Mexico. Last week I said, I think Laura's lost in Mexico.
You never know. It can be easily done.
I know. I'm glad you're here tonight. And how are things going down there?
No, very good. Spring is in the air, and the weather is perfect, so no reason not to come down.
Great. So I know a couple of weeks ago we talked about how you were going to tell us about music the music that is going on in Vallarta these days. Can you tell us a little bit about all of the music?
There's a lot of live music here. There's a lot of musicians in town. This is very much an artist enclave, which, you know, incorporates everything from painters to sculptors to musicians. And mm-hmm. somebody very famous from Texas, Joe King Carrasco, lives here.
Oh, yes.
And, I know. And he's done recently he put together a music video and a song about the stray dogs in Puerto Vallarta because he's a big dog lover, has three mm-hmm. of his own, and he's been doing a lot to promote, you know, the cause here. So he recently did a song and did a video for that. So that's all online as well. So
very nice.
He's been doing a lot to promote that. And most of the bars and restaurants here do have live music, which a lot of people don't think about, you know, other than the strolling musicians that, you know, cruise through town doing the same songs. But, you know, a lot of the bars do have, you know, live music, everything from rock and disco and Latin music to jazz and, you know, other things like that.
You have a lot of jazz down there? I wouldn't think of
jazz. There's a lot of jazz places. There's a lot of people that do different music because the audience is different. So, you know, what works for some things may not work for others, but, you know, a lot of Mexicans, you know, and a lot of people that live here, you know, want to hear other music other than the typical Mexican, quote, tourist music. You know, they want to be able to go out and hear, you know, some live music, you know, and enjoy a bottle of wine and other things, you know, along those lines. So there are a lot of bands here that play, you know, great Latin guitar music and other things like that. So, you know, other than that, and, you know, mariachi music obviously is very, you know, instrumental in a lot of the restaurants here. So,
right. So do a lot of the winter visitors or the retirees that have moved down there year-round from the U.S. and Canada, do they find the music to be what they like?
Yes, they do. They, you know, quickly adapt to, you know, what's going on. And there's nothing like a musician that is live that, you know, is, you know, going from table to table or is playing, you know, on a small stage in a restaurant. You know, live music has its own appeal for everybody, and, you know, they take requests. You know, a lot of the bands and guys take requests, and so it's very personal to an extent that, you know, they play what the people want to hear. So, you know, that part of the aspect, you know, that part of the entertainment is very appealing. We do have some theaters now here that are very big, and they are featuring, you know, not only plays and other short skits, but they are also featuring musical bands and, you know, a wide variety of music from classical to jazz to Mexican, and you can go see a show and then, you know, definitely go out to dinner afterwards. And but the array is just a lot bigger than it was, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago. So
Things have changed in the last few years.
Yeah, you know, people are getting a little more, you know, encompassing, you know, so it's not just one kind of music or one kind of thing. So, you know, we have our own version of The Voice or whatever those, I don't know all the names of the TV shows.
Do you really?
But we do have yes, it's a live thing. You can see it, they usually do it at the theater on Sundays, and you have to check the schedule, but they do have, you know, talent contests for singers and things like that. So, you know, from that aspect, it's really kind of interesting to see the people that come out to participate. So that part's really exciting. Yeah. So you can see, you know, kids doing these great musical numbers and singing their hearts out, and, you know, it's all right here in the local theater. So that part of it is, you know, the theater is the Act Two Theater is really, you know, pushing the envelope with, you know, talent searches and doing things on their own. So, yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. So with regard to Joe King Carrasco, you mentioned his YouTube video. What is it called? Do you know?
It is called The Plight of the Dogs, and you can check it out on his YouTube channel, which is at Joe King Carrasco. And, yeah, he does a little song about the dogs in the shelter.
Okay.
One of the many shelters here in Puerto Vallarta. But, no, he's been a big fan of helping with the overpopulation of dogs and cats, and definitely a big advocate for spaying and neutering and, you know, getting the word out to people that, you know, hey, we need to curtail all prior beliefs and, you know, believe in the dogs and, you know, working on adopting out the dogs and cats that are in the local pounds and shelters here.
Right.
So, yeah. He's a big advocate, so it's great to work with him and great to have his song online.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
So is things kind of winding down now that it's springtime? Are a lot of people going home?
It's kind of funny because people are like, oh, it's getting to be spring and we need to go back. Well, that's a bunch of crap because, you know, the weather is still good here until, you know, for me, until August. Yeah, a lot of snowbirds do go back this time of year. A lot of them wait until after Easter, which this year is the end of April. But, you know, there's no reason not to come down. And it's kind of sad that people have the mindset, oh, we got to leave before Easter or whatever. But that's crazy because the weather is still fabulous right now. And, you know, to go home to 40-degree weather just doesn't sound like fun to me. So, but the town does kind of clear out, and it's kind of silly because there's many things going on. We have restaurant week coming up.
A lot of things. Okay. That's
There's still a lot of things to do here, and in May we have the restaurant weeks, you know, where the restaurants offer 3-course meals for several different prices, so you can sample some of the best restaurants in town for a fraction of what you would pay normally. And the whole idea of, like, oh, the town closes down after Easter is just absolutely ridiculous because there is still so much going on here and the weather is still absolutely fabulous. So why would you leave paradise to go home and sit in 50-degree weather under cloudy skies and rain?
Good question.
You know?
Spring up north is not always beautiful. So right now they're still getting slammed with a lot of snow, in fact, in the northwest.
Snow, rain. Exactly. Why would you leave?
So come on down to Mexico.
Exactly.
There's still time. Right?
There is definitely still time.
And still things going on.
Definitely. I mean, there's still, we have a bunch of charity events coming up yet. The Altruism Festival, there's, you know, some rodeo events, and there's just a lot of stuff going on. And so it would be kind of crazy to stay at home because you didn't think there was anything going on. But there's always a ton of stuff going on.
So how can people find out what's going on?
Well, they can log on to Banderas News, BanderasNews.com, which is, we are in the Bay of Banderas. So they can log on to that site, which is updated daily, which is the only site in the Bay updated daily. So you can kind of, you know, get a, you know, you can catch news briefs, events, et cetera, and, you know, find out what's really going on here. And, you know, it's a great way to become part of the community.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Laura, before you go, we were messaging earlier, you mentioned about a new video series that you're doing. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I'm going to start a new video series online called Vallarta Life, and it's going to focus on everyday life here. You know, I'm going to interview the woman who drives by my house every day selling fruits out of the pickup truck, taco stands, you know, different things that, you know, people may not think about when they are, you know, possibly pondering moving down here, and, you know, introducing people to how life can be in Mexico and in Puerto Vallarta.
And is that going to be through Banderas News?
That'll be on Banderas News and my YouTube channel and wherever else I can put it.
What is your YouTube channel?
The YouTube channel is TV Puerto Vallarta. And on there is well over 100 videos right now of life in Puerto Vallarta, you know, from past projects. Yeah, past projects, dealing with retirement, food, you name it, real estate, it's all on there. So I've got a lot of videos on there as well.
Oh, great.
And going to start a new series and hopefully branch off into a couple other series. So you know,
hopefully,
just getting the word out there and letting people know how great it is to live here.
And like we talked about earlier, it'd be fun to do a series with you.
Oh, definitely. Got to get you down here again. Haven't seen you in years.
Yes. I know. Well, I'm going to come down there, and we'll do a series.
Yeah, definitely. Talking about retirement here and, you know, a lot of the reasons why people are retiring in Mexico and, you know, maybe not particularly in Puerto Vallarta, but, you know, the cost is of living here is so low compared to the United States. A lot of baby boomers are deciding that, hey, you know, if I sell my house in the U.S., I'll have this much money in the bank. I can go live in Mexico for a fraction of what I pay in the United States. So, you know, granted, it is not for everyone, but at the same time, you know, people who are, you know, conscious of their purse strings, you know, this Mexico is a good option for a lot of people. Because their health care is less expensive, their food is less expensive. You know, a lot of the things that, you know, you need for everyday life are less expensive in Mexico. So it's kind of an interesting, it's an interesting trend.
And is it less expensive to go out and listen to all of this music as well?
It can be. You know, it's you know, I'm not going to say a lot of the restaurants, you know, are inexpensive, but a lot of the places, you know, for the price of a drink, you know, which could be anywhere from $5 to $10, you know, you can go and listen to a live band, you know, and you'll be on the beach and tropical setting. And, you know, a lot of that is very important to a lot of people. So, you know,
it can...
Yeah, oh, yeah. The theater here is inexpensive. Most of the shows are under $30 to go see. And it's worth exploring because it's definitely a different type of lifestyle than most people live when they're in the States, because a lot of people get isolated even in their homes in the United States. And here it's all about community and getting together. And sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad, because sometimes this is a very little town. So everybody knows you eventually know everybody in the long run. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting, that aspect. But, you know, it can be fun. So, but the music, live music here is alive and thriving.
Okay. Well, Laura, I'm glad we found you in Mexico.
We're getting there.
And,
Waiting for the time change.
Yes. Will you be back in 2 weeks?
April 6th, we change our clocks.
Okay.
I don't know what's up with the United States making it so much earlier. The rest of the world changes in April, so.
it confuses everybody. But I'd love to have you back on the show in 2 weeks.
Definitely.
I think that that's when, right after the time change.
There you
go.
So
we'll be in sync.
We'll be on the same clock.
That's right. All right, Laura, you have a very good night.
I will definitely have that. You too.
Thank you. All right. So stick around. We're going to take a very brief break. And when we come back, musicians Joe and Rosa Perez talk about their roots music project from north of the border. So come right back.
Go.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Karpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Karpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.
Two, three, four.
back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel in your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmarakarpel.com. And you're just listening, you were just listening to Joe and Rosa Perez, who are now joining us from Brownsville, Texas on the telephone. Good evening, Joe and Rosa.
Good evening, Mara. How are you?
Hi, Mara.
I'm fine. How are things down in Brownsville?
It got cool. We had we're having drizzly, cool weather. It was almost 80 degrees earlier.
Well, I guess that's a nice change.
Yeah, it feels actually pretty
nice. Once in a while. So what was the song that we were just listening to?
Okay, the song is called Las Gaviotas, which means the seagulls. And it's an old standard Mexican folk song.
Okay, and I think that's the name of the hotel that I stayed in when I was in Vallarta.
Okay.
Las Gaviotas. We were just talking with Laura Galazunas, who's in Vallarta, so it's a good tie-in.
Yeah, except that we're north of the border.
And now you're north of the border. So she was south of the border, and you're north of the border. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourselves and your musical history?
Okay. I'm a retired school teacher. I taught high school for 20 years. And as far as my musical history, I'm a self-taught folk musician. I grew up listening to radio in Spanish.
Uh-huh.
And so when I retired, I started writing, and some of the stuff started taking on melodies, and I started writing some of my own stuff. But for many years, I accompanied myself very, very crudely on the guitar to Mexican folk music.
Mm-hmm. And Joe, are you there?
Joe, he's right here. Hold on.
Okay.
Yeah. For me, the whole thing started. I'm kind of one of those. I go by the old axiom: wherever you go, there you are. And when we retired, well, I tried a couple of other things. I mean, I built outdoor furniture for a while, and I did some technical writing. But when Rosa retired, and we were both off, we decided to explore this. And I had a little bit of history from my grandparents. My grandfather's brothers were all itinerant musicians in the 30s and 40s. And so I had a little bit of history, but I had never learned to play guitar. So we took our three chords and capos, and we started doing some presentations at the Cultural Center, actually. You know, pro bono stuff that they wanted us to do orientation for some Teach for America teachers that were coming down to the valley. So we did orientations, yeah, for them. And then we got invited to join the Texas Commission on the Arts, and we were on a touring roster for a while. So we were able to travel throughout the state for a bit. But the main thing that I was into when I wanted to do this music was I wanted to preserve it, because I know that a lot of the older folks, older than myself, and I'm only 66, but I had been, my grandmother had been in a nursing home, and she used to enjoy when we would go and sing a couple of songs for her. So after she passed away, Rosa and I decided that was something we wanted to do, and so we would visit nursing homes and perform some of that music, and we went as far as to adopt a nursing home, and of course, that's what that meant. We would go four times a year. We'd go and do concerts for them and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And that evolved, evolved also into the radio program. We were recommended.
Talk about your radio program.
The radio program is called North of the Border, and we use mostly recorded music for that. It's not our music. And when I say our, that we've recorded, it's all pre-recorded music, and we do stuff from the turn of the century and the turn of the other century. I mean, depending on what we can find, but we just try to, present the music that we like and show how we grew up here in South Texas, music from north of the Rio Grande, for the name.
So is that, where is that show? Where is that show being played?
Okay, the radio program, North of the Border, it is it is broadcast from KMBH Radio in Harlingen, Texas. And you can listen to it streaming also. It comes on at 12:30 on Fridays and at 11. The same show is rebroadcast on Saturdays at 11. And and you can find KMBH.org and find the local programs, and you can catch a streaming. And so we really enjoyed doing that. So this is our sixth year, actually, for doing that.
Yeah,
so,
I used to enjoy listening to it on the local NPR station that was in South Texas. Is that still there, or is KMBH?
It's still an NPR station. Yes, it is still an NPR station. I understand that the television station is being sold, but the radio is still the same. And of course, well, then that, since we started having more people, you know, on the radio that got familiar with who we are, we started attracting some other musicians that were kind of interested in what we were doing. And, well, Russell can tell you about that, because what we ended up doing was we ended up with this recording project that we get some musicians that come in and help us do some of Russell's original, which is not as folky as, you know, the old stuff that we sing as Rumbo a la Nacua. Rumbo a la Nacua is our duet, and the recording project is called Paurake, which is another bird theme, but that's another story.
Okay.
Here's Rosa, and she'll tell you about the recording project.
Okay, let me hear about that.
I'm back. It's the night that you saw us perform at the Half Moon. That was the night that we were on stage with the members of the Paurake Border Roots Project. And that was a rare performance because we are primarily a recording project. I've been writing since I retired. I was writing songs to document the dynamics of life on the border. And I had a bunch of original songs, and they seemed to like them. And we decided to get together and record here at home. We started with just a little small Zoom recorder, and then now we have a little studio. But the idea, of course, like I said, is to capture historically and socially relevant themes, border themes, in my music is how I write. And it sounds quite different. Like, you know, I'm some of the musicians, we got a couple of rock and rollers, we got a blues musician, and then Joe and I come from the folk stuff. So,
right.
Yeah, that's what makes it, you know, a little bit more unusual. That's the Border Roots Project, and we've been together close to 5 years already. So we've got a lot of stuff
that's
recorded.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but I want to go to your next song. We're going to play a little bit of your next song.
Okay?
So here it is.
Okay. I'll be listening.
Esa mirada triste, Agustín, ¿qué me podía contar? Tu alma era un teclado, tu vida era un bolero, los sueños de Granada, Agustín, se hicieron realidad. Besaste la tierra y la llamaste madre, lamento jarocho con embrujo gitano, el amor de tus amores era España, y yo quería ser la rosa en tu jardín, o la María bonita en Acapulco. Solamente una vez, en una noche de ronda, sabiendo que...
All right, we're listening to Joe and Rosa Perez. So what is the name of that song?
That song is called La Mirada de Agustín, the look on Agustín. And it's a tribute to one of Mexico's great bolero artists and composers, Agustín Lara.
Okay.
Yeah. During what I did when I wrote that song was that I put in, I wove into the lyrics a lot of the titles to his songs to kind of connect with the audience when I was doing it, since it is original material. And so that's been a good song, especially for the older folks, because the bolero genre, the bolero rhythm is very popular here in the Brownsville area. I think that one's on YouTube. And
okay.
I've done other tribute songs, you know, to my heroes, the late Américo Paredes, the professor from Austin, who was originally from Brownsville. And I have one to the late Raul Salinas, the poet laureate of East Austin. Adios Leslie for the man in Austin who kept it weird.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I do that, you know, and then my original music, which I get again is part of what we're recording, it can be as serious as one of my songs is called Las Yogas, and it addresses the plastic gallon jugs of water that are littered upon crossing the Rio Grande as the undocumented people make their walk through the brushland, you know, and there's plastic, there's gallon jugs of water everywhere with all sorts of secrets.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So your Border Roots project, that's mainly recordings of your songs about the north of the Rio Grande Valley?
Yes. That is primarily a recording project to capture, I guess, my original stuff. We do folk music every now and then. We did one album together to celebrate the centennial of the Mexican Revolution, and we did all revolution songs.
Okay.
That was in 2010.
Is that your third song I have here, is Tierra y Libertad. Is that one of your revolution songs?
Absolutely. I wrote that to commemorate the centennial, because that's when my grandparents crossed over from Mexico.
Okay. We're going to play that one song right now, okay?
Okay, cool.
You know what? I'm getting the message from Art. We're going to play it on the outro.
Okay.
So then I have a few more moments to talk to you. I want to let listeners know, if you can, how they can find out more about your Border Roots project and again, if you can let them know again about your radio show, all that kind of stuff.
Okay, you can find out or all about us and the Border Roots Project and the radio show at www.rumboalanacua.com. Rumbo al Anacua, all together. Anacua with a C.
Can you spell it out?
Sure. RUMBOALANACUA.
Okay. .com.
Rumboalanacua.com. Okay. And there's links up at the top where you can listen to sound clips and take, you know, navigates you through the other projects that we have.
Great. And I will post that on my website, so if people didn't get to their pen and paper in time, they can look there. And that will also link them to the radio show, North of the Border.
Thank you. Yes, North of the Border, and that's on KMBH 88 FM.
Okay. And I wanted to let you know one of your former students called in before with a question, and he gave a shout-out to you. Ernesto says hi.
Oh, okay. Well, how nice.
He called in with a great question for our speaker earlier. So... Ernesto Elizondo.
Yes, he was Joe's student.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, well, he says hi.
Okay, well, I'll probably run into him, you know, sometime this week or if nothing else on Facebook on a daily basis.
There you go. Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I hope to see you again soon in Brownsville.
Well, same here, Mara. Thank you for inviting us, and it was a pleasure visiting with you, and I wish you much success on your show.
Well, thank you, and much success to you and your project.
Thank you. Thank you.
Have a good night, and we're going to play that last one, Tierra y Libertad.
Land and Liberty. Here we go. Thank you.
There we go. All right. Bye. Good night.
Good night.
Mexicanos al grito de guerra, machete en la mano. En el aire se prenden los versos de una canción. Campesinos que huyen descalzos de los hacendados a ingresar a las filas que luchan por una ilusión. Adelita en los campos curaba soldados heridos. La Marieta prendía cigarros de hoja de maíz. Valentina bañaba un caballo a la orilla de un río. Y la rielera esperaba a la orilla de un ferrocarril. Tierra.
That is Joe and Rosa Perez, and Land and Liberty, Tierra y Libertad. And now we have come to the end of another show. 2 hours has really flown by tonight, and I want to let you know what's coming up next week right here on Dr. Mara Carpell and Your Golden Years. Tune in next Sunday, March 30th at 5 p.m. Central Time, when I will be back on location on South Padre Island. And joining me will be local and long-term care ombudsman from the Office of the State Long-Term Care Ombudsman, Iowa Department of Aging, Kimberly Weaver, who will be talking about that program, which is national and is very important. It's very important to know that it exists and what it does. Also, Kyle Ruddick, founder and director of the One Day on Earth Project, will be joining us from California. And sax player Paul Klimpera of Manteca Beat will be joining us from here in Austin, Texas. And if you want to hear tonight's program again and read the information from this show and all of the links to the websites, also if you want to know about upcoming shows, go to my website, drmaracarpell.com. That's drmaracarpell.com. And also be sure to follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Carpell, Your Golden Years. Tonight's show was produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Psyched Up Productions, and sponsored by Sonia Das, the Bra Lady, and by Live Oak Legacies. Special thanks to my guests, Jenny Lear, Joe and Rosa Perez, Laura in Vallarta. Thank you, Art. Thank you, Crystal. And thank you all for listening. Have a peaceful night and inspiring week. And remember, youth has no age. Good night, everyone.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Carpell is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Carpell, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.